Right. I will talk about early universe cosmology, and the purpose is to bring the problems which we are dealing with in the physics of inflation to the community which is dealing with non-equilibrium processes. But before that, I have to make significant introduction. And the topics I would like to cover are non-equilibrium phenomena in early universe, and one of them is inflation itself. It's a very non-equilibrium state. I will talk about speculations to make inflation and speculations to consider the physics after inflation. And very interesting would be the tests to check those speculations. But before doing those speculations, I will tell you who gave us the license to do speculations. And I'll begin with the concise history of early universe, with the universe at all. This is a familiar picture of expanding universe. This is space and time. And we are living today observing large-scale structure in the details, in the form of the cosmic web, which we understand originated from random Gaussian fluctuations in early universe. We observed CMB, and we observed the universe up to the its age when it was 100 seconds or so, Big Bang nuclear synthesis. And beyond that point, there are speculations, but there are speculations based on our observations again. So we believe that cold dark matter was originated sometime around the universe of 30 MeV hot, and there were familiar processes like QCD transitions and electroweak phase transitions. Baryogenesis should take place somewhere. And we're going to the beginning, and I will not repeat the arguments why we introduce inflation, which explains the initial conditions for the subsequent evolution. It's quite amazing that I was very impressed with the talk about LHC physics. That talk was in the framework, mostly in the framework of the standard model of particles. The reasons to believe in physics beyond the standard models came mostly from cosmology. And this is cold dark matter, which we believe are relic particles beyond standard model. It is inflation itself, which is shall be done with something outside of the standard model. Baryogenesis can be done in the standard model, and cosmological constant. So other arguments to consider besides aesthetics and the unification to consider physics, experimental evidence to consider physics beyond standard model. Neutrino mass, probably. But most of the arguments came from cosmology. So anyway, here is... when we're dealing with the data, it's hard to resist. So anyway, this is a territory of reciprocal universe when we're dealing with, not with the scales, but with the scales of energies. And the universe is opening when we're going to the beginning, just opposite things. And those icons represents the physics which corresponds to, which we think corresponds to different, or assume corresponds to different energetical periods. So let's talk about this stage, inflation. Inflation is the hypothetical period in very early universe when the universe was expanding very fast, superluminally, and the scalar factor of the universe was expanding exponentially or quasi-exponentially. Somehow it will turn into the radiation domination when expansion is square root of t, scalar factor goes square root of t. And from general relativity, we know that to realize each stage, we have to provide the equation of state of the material. And we don't need to know often in cosmology the microscopical origin of the equation of state. We can, as far as we defined it, we can do a lot. Example is dark matter itself. We don't know microscopical origin of dark matter particles, but we approximate its equation of state as a matter equation of state. In other words, pressure is almost zero, and this is enough to do in-body simulations and to get cosmic web in-body simulations, even if you don't know its physics. There is a lot of similarity with inflation. We may not know what is the component, but as far as we claim there is a vacuum-like equation of state, then from gravity equation it follows exponential expansion, and we get what we want: homogeneity of the universe, isotropic universe, almost flat, practically flat universe, etc. The simplest way to realize inflation is to introduce scalar field. And when we introduce scalar field and dealing with the condensate of the almost homogeneous scalar field, then we can calculate from first principles pressure, energy, density. And in the regime when this motion of the scalar field is very small, this is small, this is small, this is dominant terms, we get a vacuum-like equation of state. The very important thing is that as far as we dealing with that geometry, we can find a universal mechanisms which are very, very specific for that geometry. If we consider quantum field theory in an expanding, very exponentially expanding universe, we encounter a new phenomena. We encounter generation of long wavelength fluctuations. Take any light field and quantized it at the background of exponential or quasi-exponential expanding universe. So what we do, we do usual decompositions. The mode functions, time-dependent part, because the universe is homogeneous, the special dependence is just simple plane waves, trivial. Non-trivialities are here, and they are based oscillator-like equation, and we take a light field here. The difference from that equation in flat space-time in this room is that there is a redshifting of momentum, and there is also a Hubble drag because of the expansion of the universe. But because of those non-trivialities, instead of oscillating solution, we will have very different time-dependent solutions. First of all, we see that the behavior is very different initially, when no redshifting significant, then this term is bigger than that term, and this wave function is oscillating with time. But when this term became very small, this became a dominant term, it turns out the solution will be almost constant, and overall picture is that we are oscillating first, and when wavelengths of these given fluctuations goes outside of the horizon and freezes and behaves like a classical scalar field itself. And the amplitude will be given by the only dimension parameter here is the Hubble parameter, almost constant during this quasi-de Sitter era. And this process, kicking off fluctuations from oscillatory to frozen state, happens each nick of time, and when they all accumulate together, the superposition of waves with random modes will give us random Gaussian field, something shown over here. And this random Gaussian field is different from the random Gaussian field outside of the institute in the ocean, because those are moving waves, random Gaussian field, and those are standing waves. They are not evolving this time anymore. They are standing waves, and the Hubble causal patch is as small as that, and outside of the horizon, we have this prepared inhomogeneities of the scalar field. It's very, very unique mechanism of generation of fluctuations. We have no analogy in any other expansions. Inside Friedman universe, we don't have this because we cannot send our wave outside of the horizon. Anyway, so it's very important that the Hubble radius during inflation is changing very slowly and is increasing linearly with time after inflation. So during inflation, we are sending this outside, And after inflation, this is when inflation ends, and here we formulate initial conditions for the subsequent Friedman evolution. Those fluctuations exiting the horizon, and they start to perturb the plasma of the universe, and if it happens in proper time, then it will perturb cosmic microwave background, and we will be seen as in homogeneities of the CMB fluctuations. The theory of this process goes like that. We take geometry, and we perturb geometry with only single parameter here is capital phi, which corresponds to relativistic generalization of the Newtonian gravitational potential. We perturb scalar field, and we solve Einstein equations for those perturbations. And after we work it out, we can find what will be the amplitude of those fluctuations. In other words, I was before showing you what happens with the scalar field. The metric response to this random Gaussian of the scalar field will be a random Gaussian field of the gravitational potential. And I'm on purpose doing this boring mathematical exercise. You will see why. And we'll find the amplitude of this gravitational potential, relativistic gravitational potential, which is amplitude of those modes outside of the horizon, is given by the potential which governs inflation itself. Let's take very simple potential, m squared phi squared. We know how scalar field evolving this time, slow rolling. We know how scalar factor is evolving with time. This is initial value. Suppose we start some evolution from the initial value. The scalar factor was a naught, initial value of the field. So, and scalar factor is decreasing. We substitute that to the formula, and we obtain logarithmic running of the spectrum of the potential. The spectrum is almost scale-free, except logarithmic running. And if you do it more generally, then there will be power which reflects which potential exactly we put here. So it's a logarithmic running of the potential, which is of the interests.
In all this analysis, where does one assume that phi is a quantum field and not a classical field?
We do both. You take background plus fluctuations.
Yeah, but it is a semi-classical approximation.
Yeah, it is semi-classical approximation, but absolutely valid.
You change background a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's background is moving. Yeah, it's adiabatic process. It's very slow adiabatic process.
No, but essentially, I'm trying to understand. Once you actually take into account fluctuations, these fluctuations are large. They become large.
No, they're not large. The amplitude of fluctuations proportional to the Hubble parameter. The Hubble parameter here is 10 to 13 GeV. The value of phi is 10 to, it's order of Planck and mass, 10 to 19 GeV. So Hubble is many, many, many order of magnitudes smaller than the background. So in other words, fluctuations, many, many, many.
The ground all the time for energy.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are fluctuations. Anyway, so this is logarithmic running. This is the scale corresponds to the very end of inflation. This is running, and let me pick up some point of interest, say the scales of galaxies, this one. So very complicated mathematics. This is analytics. This is as much analytics as cosmologists can do. So we play with this logarithm. We introduce the scale, the pivot point, which leads somewhere on the sky corresponding to size of clusters or superclusters. So we look at this and say that we can identify this ratio between scale at the end of inflation and scale corresponding to the point of interest, say galaxy, as exactly number of effoldings. It's an energetic number of effoldings, which corresponds to number of effoldings of inflation. The time during inflation we measure in terms of effoldings. So the effolding is defined this way. The scalar factor, remember, was e to the ht. It's ehn. N is the number of effolding. And it turns out this number of effolding also corresponds to the logarithm of the wavelengths of fluctuations which are sent outside of the horizon. So anyway, we're playing with mathematics and can approximate this logarithmic running with a simple formula. Often when observers will look at the sky and try to reconstruct power spectrum of fluctuations, they are making power law field. This is a pivot point I was talking about, scale of galaxies, suppose. And they are saying that the spectrum was almost scale free. This is to say that NS is almost close to 1, but a little bit different. So do now a similar decomposition here, and what you'll get, you get that the spectral index of fluctuations differs from 1 by a very small number, which reflects two things. This is information from the potential, and this is information how long inflation was lasting. Okay? But this is what observers are doing, and this is very good because models of inflation will be imprinted in the data. However, for us, it will be interesting that underlying potential has logarithmic running. All of this I did just to tell you that this is quite a familiar picture.
So why don't you tell the people that the
data is right, because it's undistinguishable at the range we are observing. Yes, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Well, so we are doing even more sophisticated things now. We are doing now a spline fitting to arbitrary function. But the tradition so far was to do power law, and this is one number to run after. Anyway, my point is that running, as you know, is very, very important because it reflects a new level of physics, right? It's running in particle physics tells us about quantum field theory. Running in a cosmology, running of the power spectrum of fluctuations tells us that there is some dynamics during inflation. And this is a lot of information. Because if there is no running, is scalar spectral index is equal exactly 1, this spectral index called Zeldovich spectrum was invented by many people, including Zeldovich, long before we knew in the 60s about inflation, just on the basis of consistency. What I mean, if you have power spectrum, which is not close to scale free spectrum and has a tilt, then you look what happens on very large or at very small scales, and you encounter sooner or later fluctuations will be order of unity. It means from the beginning, at your initial hypersurface, you already deal with nonlinear black holes, roughly speaking. To avoid this, let's make it scale free. And this is exactly the motivation for which was driven.
But it was mathematical motivation.
It was mathematical motivation, right. So anyway.
Unitarity means that you break unitarity. Not really break unitarity, simply you do not do proper calculations.
So anyway, message here is that logarithmic running, it's quite fun to have it in a different branch of physics, is indication of very slow dynamics, and the said indication of what happens with inflation. Anyway, this is what inflation predicts. And as I said, inflation, all theory of inflation is about mechanisms, universal mechanisms. And a similar thing about gravitational waves. One can build up this theory of gravitational waves, metric fluctuations here, and the equation for these fluctuations in this quasi-exponential expansion are given by the equation for the scalar field with no mass. And the story is the same. They are leaving the horizons and outside as a gravitational tensor mod, gravitational metric fluctuations, gravitational waves of very large wavelengths, and we can work out its amplitude, and its amplitude is proportional to the potential. In other words, it's exactly proportional to energy scale of inflation. If we would measure amplitude of gravity waves, we'll immediately measure this energy scale of inflation. Not only the scalar field, scalar fluctuations are sensitive to the profile of the potential, and the magnitude of the potential will be reflected in the gravitational waves. So anyway, all of this is good, and at the end of the day, so those fluctuations sent outside, and as I said, at the end of inflation, it's a random Gaussian field of metric fluctuations. This is a cartoon representation of what I was talking before, and this is what we're supposed to see. We're supposed to see response to these metric fluctuations in the CMB anisotropy, and what do we have today? So we historical, I'll just show you several things. This is some years ago, Cisabel. We take sky, we take temperature map, we decompose into these spherical harmonics, and coefficients will be angular power spectrum of those fluctuations. And the angular power spectrum as function of the multiple is plotted here. Those oscillations correspond to the acoustic oscillations. This horizon, very large scales are here, very small scales are here. And different experiments, WMAP 3 is given by red points. It see first peak, second peak, unclear what you see here. Boomerang experiment, balloon experiment, see first peak, second, third, fourth. As time progressed, that was last year results, more data, CBI experiment, cosmic background imager in Chile, Akbar experiment in South Pole, adds more data, and I would say we see fourth and fifth peak. And culmination is what Akbar gave us in January, months ago. We see not only all peaks, but also damping tail. And this is great. This is a very impressive piece of data. So altogether, VMAP 3, Akbar, and Boomerang gives us very precise measurement and all of those acoustic peaks. So we see all acoustic peaks. No more will be seen. And this is damping tail. And the error bars of this experiment quite significantly low. If we parameterized the underlying spectrum in the power law, but we remember it's logarithmic, we can calculate this index, and this index is here. This is different experiments give us a little bit shift. It's about 0.96. We definitely not in the scale free regime. We definitely observe this. So this is an amazing piece of data, and this is a license to speculate. Because we want to understand not only mechanisms of inflation, but we want to build up microscopical theory of inflation. And this is what I'm going to talk about a little bit.
Let's say a finite number of acoustic peaks.
Yeah.
So, but why is the dot the less but one dot? It doesn't equal
No, it's a damping tail. This is called damping tail.
But just looking at the data, yeah. Right, the black dot looks like to be a little bit higher than the other two dots.
Well, you have to look at the. So you have to look at this. There are different curves. There are models. Different models going through the data. This is the data. This is the best. Anyway, we're seeing damping tail. Now let's return to the model building. What I was talking about is that this assumption that we are dealing with a something which behaves like effective scalar field is a working assumption. It gives us great data. And we can continue to speculate. This is what I'm going to do. So the basic mechanism is here. And the whole history of inflation, theory of inflation, was about what we put here, what we choose as a potential. And this is, of course, a mess. And this is a historic reflection what we did put in the this potential. It comes from the particle physics model of unification of the day. And in the 80s, people were working with the grand unification models. The first model Stravinsky invented was based on vacuum polarization. It was a little bit ahead of time. And as people were working with more supergravity was popular, people were trying to find a scalar field. Inflation is about scalar field. It's a finding scalar field. And such a scalar field, which is different from Higgs, which is not strongly interacting with the standard model. And all of those names reflect, as I said, pairing with the particle physics. And from the name, you can judge in the last several years, people were trying to find models of inflation in string theory. How we'll know that we are on the right track? The two criteria. First, the model of choice will be well motivated by particle physics. And second, it will be compatible with the data. And compatible with the data means that this perfect index of fluctuations and gravity waves predicted in the model will be compatible with what I was showing before. To my taste, the best situation in that respect was back in 1982. And that was a new inflationary scenario based on SU5 model of Coleman Miner, because it was a very good model motivated by particle physics. It was not clear that time, but actually it's cosmology which says it's not good, because the amplitude of fluctuations predicted by that model was at the level 10 to the minus 1. So we need 10 to the minus 5. Anyway, but that was still a good time because it was well-motivated model. Today we don't have such a well-motivated model. When we're doing inflation, as I said again, mechanism, universal mechanisms, and I will flash what I mean by that. A simple example of the mechanism is given by a theory. If we consider quantum, if we consider a scalar field and gravity alone, we would like to understand how typical is inflation. It was not clear at all back in the first model that inflation is typical. It was thought to be a fine-tune. You have to take initial conditions. You have to take hot universe initially, and it finds itself in the metastable vacuum. Then it's cooling and phase transition occurs, and inflation will take place. We don't need this anymore. Now, the modern take is that we, from the beginning, can start with a very non-equilibrium state. We don't want thermal universe initially. It may be, but not necessarily. Much more freedom is if we're just dealing with a randomly distributed scalar field. We take scalar field, put it somewhere on your potential, the value of phi, whatever you like. The only thing is that the potential, the energy should be less than Planck n one. Plug it in the basic equations, and let's analyze what kind of solutions we can get. And again, if I switched off expansion of the universe, not this term, I will have just single equation for oscillator, and its solution, all its solutions are given by this phase portrait of oscillators. Okay, but if I have expansion of the universe, it will be entering in the Hubble parameter. All solutions, the phase portrait, will be have this character. And this is quite different from that. The last portion, when the field is oscillating, is quite close to the damped oscillation. And this will correspond to the latest state after a very long period of something, when the field is oscillating around the minimum. But before that, we, for a long time, may be moving along with this separatrix. It's quite nice to draw the whole phase portrait, including infinities. So you'll have special points at infinity, and you will see that this separatrix goes to infinity, and its presence is topologically motivated. And I can change my potentials, but topologically the separatrix is still there. It means that all of those trajectories coming from different initial conditions will approach these intermediate asymptotics and move together to here. And you can guess that this intermediate asymptotics is inflationary solution.
I think this comparison is very misleading with this picture of a pen. You have a quantum field, of course, you also draw primitive solution phi.0,
but the purpose of this picture is to remind the ideas of the phase portrait.
What you don't have is this nice turning around.
Yeah. So it's important that this picture brings together all the stages. What would be potential pre-inflationary stages, what is inflationary stage, and end of inflation. And this is much richer than you can think. As I said, if we're using Poincaré projection of this phase portrait, infinity points will correspond to singularities. In other words, you can start with a singularity with a scalar field. You even can start with anisotropic solutions, and dynamically you will come here, and your geometry will be anisotropized, and you will get inflationary solution. This is the power of this picture. By the way, those pictures are not so trivial. For instance, if I consider scalar field potential, with slightly negative contribution, negative cosmological constant, my face portrait will be quite different. It will have an expanding branch and contracting branch, and all expanding branch sooner or later, all trajectory goes to contracting branch. It means that the cosmological negative cosmological constant is leading us to the contracting universe. But it's just
you always discuss classical fields.
Yes, at this moment, yes. At this moment, yes. For the last 2 minutes, yes.
Can you say precisely where actually quantum theory becomes important?
A lot places. It's
but in your picture, at what parameter?
Right. So the Hubble parameter, the amplitude of fluctuations, delta phi, is 10 to the 7th of the values of phi at the stages when relevant inflation, 60-fold inflation, takes place. Quantum fluctuations at this interval is not relevant for that particular picture.
Phi is measured in Planck mass.
That's right.
Where is the Planck mass?
One is somewhere here. If you believe in supergravity. No. You can take value of phi as large as 10 Planckian mass or 100 Planckian mass as far as the potential is less than m Planck to the 4.
Well, if you think of that,
yeah. But if I take supergravity, I completely agree with you. Yeah, I know. I'm coming to. I will talk about this. So, if you don't take supergravity, or if you even if you take supergravity and manage with the shift symmetry to have this type of the potential, you still will not have a blow up, exponential blow up through the Keller. The R situation in supergravity can manage to have m square, phi square, the persisting.
Is the same true of phi dot, whatever, phi square and
phi? No, phi dot is very small here. It's this unity will be 10 to the minus 6 of m Planck. This is measured. Natural units for that is are different. It's a mass of the inflaton. So anyway, the only purpose of this plot is to show universality of this solution.
Then what happens to the fluctuation during the pre-inflation?
Pre-inflationary fluctuations, right. This is something else, it's another layer of things. If I go far away and my phi is much larger, my Hubble is much larger, and my fluctuations, which are proportional to Hubble, are much larger in amplitude, then we can encounter what is called the regime of self-reproducing. In this case, we have to cut this diagram and don't believe it, because there will be very different physics, which is described by Fokker-Planck equations or Stravinsky equations. It's very different physics.
Another question. 1260 folding orders at Dynamka flow. Which side should I sit in?
Doesn't matter.
So that's outside the Planck regime?
Yeah, 3.5 m Planck. But as I said, if we're working outside of supergravity, that's fine. If supergravity, we have to do things, and those things were done, there are examples, you still don't blow up the potential and have a larger value of phi. And I don't think anything wrong with that.
You have to assume that the initial condition is sufficiently homogeneous for that, right?
No. I can start from inhomogeneous initial conditions, and I dynamically will land on the homogeneous distribution. So, remarkable thing is, if I have potential homogenizes the solution. I can start with anisotropic solution. That's right.
And what do we demonstrate? Do you need, again, quantum field theory, or you don't need
it? I don't need quantum field theory for the situation when I deal with the condensate of the scalar field. It's a cosmology with the scalar field. Is that theorem about isotopization? I didn't say it's a theorem. I'm trying to make it accurate. No, there are many examples of that. There are arguments, it's say half of the solution behaves like that, but it's not all solutions. Many solutions go to the Kasner expansion or contraction. Kasner is very powerful asymptotics. And one can draw, in specific examples again, phase portrait. I can take different A, B, and C, anisotropic metric, and look how it goes. And roughly speaking, half solution goes to De Sitter, and half solution goes to Kasner. Yeah. Will you agree with this?
Well, I'm just remembering an old argument that, I don't know if it was the first one to make it, but I mean, you could take it. You're just solving the classical field.
That's right.
So you could take any data today, right, which is not, you know, spatially flat, nothing that you'd expect from inflation, and evolve it back and get some initial data which is going to evolve to
That's
it.
Right.
So,
but that doesn't measure the size of the...
Yeah. In the phase space, yeah. That's right.
So let's
move this. A fair fraction of the phase space of all solutions goes towards fair fraction, more than non-zero. Right. Okay, good. Then let me put this way. Without inflation, it's a zero fraction which goes to the... So anyway, cosmology with inflation with the string theory. Just flash two examples. In string theory, this is how string theorists are looking at the world. So it's our three-dimensional world is somewhere here. Right, so this is how we are looking at the world. Cosmologists, it's some small kind of space. And so from the perspective of four-dimensional cosmology, all of those geometrical constructions are very useful things because they are scalar free for scalar fields for free to build up inflation. And the two classes of inflationary models with those things, the modular inflations, which are using modal field like Keller modulus, axion fields, they already presented, and they presented, for instance, in KKLT stabilization. And other constructions are borrowing open string moduli. They're dealing with the brains, and inflaton field corresponds to distances between brains in those higher dimensions. And why I'm talking about it? Because when we're working with the field theory, the natural thing would be monotonic potentials, or say polynomial potentials. Or supergravity, there are some exponential potentials, which are not good for inflation. But the string theory gives us examples of potentials which are not intuitive at all from the field theory perspective. And this is interesting. Example is brain anti-brain in higher dimensions. They are interacting, and from four-dimensional perspective, the potential look like a very flat potential. When brain anti-brain find each other, annihilate, abruptly it's ended, and this is tachyonic annihilation, which can be described by the tachyonic field in a perpendicular direction. And this example is a prototype of what we call hybrid inflation in the field theory context. So hybrid inflationary models deals with two fields. One direction is this one perpendicular. This is in inflaton direction. So we're initially moving somewhere here in this trough, and then bifurcation points, which sent us to different direction. So the brain anti-brain potential, as I said, has many features of the hybrid inflation. An explicit example worked out has very flat potential, which is very slowly changing and abruptly decreasing at the end. And again, in the field theory, we didn't invent those type of things. They're coming from string theory. So another potential, this is example of the open string or brain world potential.
So that potential that you wrote is without modular stabilization?
No, you can put it...
If you have modular stabilizations, then you will get a huge mass.
No, so this is a KKL MFT potential. You know this
very
well.
That's a modular stabilization.
Yeah.
And then that's...
No, it is exactly potential from that. It's a KKLT with all the stabilizations they did.
There is always a coupling of that scale in the background, because the brain coupled to, you know, there is it's not a minimally coupled scale.
Okay. Well,
there will be a coupling of that type.
So what?
People start going into
So what Alex is referring to, that this particular model, has conformal coupling of the inflaton in four-dimensional gravity, and one has to do something with that. And one can do it as many people are doing, fine-tuning this coupling to zero, or how I did with Mukayama, just let it roll fast, and you still have inflation. And that's right, I thought. I take face value, it's a conformal coupling to gravity. I have this very flat potential. It turns out that if I allow conformal coupling, this motion will be not slow roll but fast roll. However, the solution will be still quasi de Sitter solution, because conformal coupling does not mean I'm giving only mass to the term. It means I'm giving many terms. And if you accurately go through all of those terms, the De Sitter solution persists to be exact solution. So it's a very interesting, exceptional case. I have a paper with Mukoyama about it. Another example is so-called Keller model inflation, or model axion inflation, and again it gives us something which we didn't think about in the field theory alone. If we are dealing with Calabi-Yau, with the holes, those holes are Keller moduli in four-dimensional perspective, and the four-dimensional effective potential was calculated for them, and it has a shape again, very shallow potential which goes to the minimum over here, which corresponds to the contracting hole. And one can work out this, through right machinery, how this potential looks like. Bottom line is, alongside with the Keller moduli, there is also axion, and if because it's a complex field, and my very minimalistic potential in this theory will have the following feature. This potential will have Keller moduli direction, it will have axionic direction, and axionic direction makes it periodic, and this periodicity will be sensitive when the Keller moduli is small. The minima here, there, and there, it's the same, it's a projection. This is the axionic direction, and this is Keller moduli direction. So they are a minimum, 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 they are bump, maximum. And the interesting thing is, I can throw out initial conditions wherever I want, and I'm dealing here with a two-dimensional hypersurface now, and all of those trajectories are inflationary trajectories. But look how funny is it. So I can start here, and dynamics will move me over there and return to one of the minimum. And I have a lot of effoldings here, and I have a lot of trajectories. And again, it's very anti-intuitive from the what we did before. Very interesting, because it teaches us many lessons. It teaches us, for instance, the following lesson, that there is an ensemble of possible for a given theory. There is an ensemble of realization of inflation. We saw it in the past, in the 90s. We can observe power spectrum, we can observe scalar tensor fluctuations, and we reconstruct the potential wrong. We reconstruct trajectory, but we don't reconstruct the potential. Still, it's a change in philosophy.
Can I think about that?
Absolutely. If you think about inflation with one complex field, this is it.
One complex field, yeah. The potential is not invariant.
That's right. So potential is non-trivial. And this would be a typical situation in string theory. So the lesson is that when we equip with string theory, we're dealing with multiple field inflation. We're dealing with ensemble of acceleration histories. We are reconstructing concrete history. And some people think about, maybe we can talk about probabilities of those trajectories. It's another subject. And one more thing in the string theory inflation is that if I consider only quantum fluctuations, then the tensor mode will be very, very small. We will not observe tensor modes. This is trademark of the string theory inflation. Why? It turns out that in these Laurel inflationary models, we can connect the range the field phi is covering. This is what you prefer to have less than Plumkin. And the number of refoldings we are observing, and the amplitude of the tensor mode. It's pretty easy, derivable formulas. And we can plot, I can take different models, different potentials, polynomial, etc., etc. This will be R, this will be the span of delta phi, and those dot points will represent what comes up from this formula. And so what we can see, if we take string theory argument that delta phi better to be less than Plankin, so over here, then we'll get R at a very small level. The R, the amplitude of tensor mode, will be at the level 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 2, or below. This is what we ultimately can measure in CMB experiments for tensor mode. In other words, we probably will not reach the level needed to check directly string theory. I have an idea how I evade this. We can talk about it later. And CMB...
How to evade this theoretically?
Yes, of course, theoretically. No, experimentally is here. They don't care about what I think, right? So the current limit for R is 0.34, and Planck satellite will be, I believe now, it will be changed to 9, gives us the tensor mode at the level of 10%. It's actually a prediction of M square phi square model, 10%. Just we'll measure it from the quadratic chaotic inflation. Spider balloon next year should be even better, somewhere here, and many people at CERN working with that. CMB poll, 100 years after October Revolution, will be at the level 10 to the minus 2. Anyway, ultimate limit, as I said, hypothetically 10 to the minus 3, and this is where the action in cosmology is. But we are predicting things. It's also fun to see if we can, as I said, if we can evade this limit. And as I said, there is a way to evade it.
Are there specific predictions for the light spectrum and tri
spectrum? No, this is something else. This is about non-Gaussianity.
So, why are these models? Since R and NS are...
They are, so roughly speaking, measure of non-Gaussianity, so-called FNL, is proportional to NS minus 1. It's a departure from scale-free spectrum, which is 0.04. And this is too small. We're observing it at the level of 100 now. And we ultimately can observe it at the level of 1. It's about too small to be observed. We can observe non-Gaussianity for different class of models.
So,
and we can talk about them.
This notion that you may not be able to measure the bi-spectrum. I mean, you can get a small bi-spectrum, but a large
right.
bi-spectrum in some
views. Sorry?
You can get a large mm-hmm. four-point correlation.
Mm-hmm. I doubt about that.
There was some discussion in Komatsu et al.
So what you're saying, if we take more extended diagnostics, we can a little bit improve this. But I don't believe we can improve it significantly. I don't want to address it today. So anyway, now I'm going to another chapter of this story. It's a creation which is closer to, that was all introduction, which is closer to... it's topic of the workshop. As I said, we got the license, right? And now we want to build up, we want to write all the chapters of the inflationary story. And after inflation itself, we want to understand what happens after inflation. During inflation, and as I said, we can have a very hot initial state, or we can have auto-equilibrium state at the beginning. During inflation, there is nothing but the scalar field, and any particles or any entropy or any temperature, all will be exponentially diluted. And it's a desert with nothing but quantum fluctuations. And yet, at the beginning, we have to arrange Big Bang to create everything what we observed in the universe. And so this is a particle genesis. And it happens. That's right. And after that, after particles are created, they'll be thermalized and go to the thermal equilibrium, and thermal history of the universe begins. Why we do care about this stage? Because one can think that thermal equilibrium will erase all the pre-thermal state, and there will be no traces of the initial conditions. We do care because we want to know in cosmology reheat temperature. If reheat temperature is very high, we may have overproduction of dangerous cosmological relics from the thermal bath. If we take textbook values of gravitino, 100 GeV, the relic temperature should be as low as 10 to the 7 GeV. You change it, you increase relic temperature, but in fact, it's not the reheat temperature which is important, but energy of particles which are created even before thermalization, which will be important. So we need to know reheat temperature or the highest energy of those particles. Next. All in cosmology, what we care about is out-of-equilibrium states. If there wouldn't be out-of-equilibrium states in cosmology, we will not have structure, we will not have barogenesis, we will not have CMB observed, we will not have anything, just everything will be thermal equilibrium. There are rare events of out-of-equilibrium when freeze-out occurs, when something interesting occurs. For instance, we need out-of-equilibrium state to generate barogenesis. And this transition from inflation to the hot Big Bang is a very powerful out-of-equilibrium event when we can fish for barogenesis and for other things. We need to know evolution of the equation of state. And after inflation, remember oscillations of the scalar field. Those oscillations of the scalar field correspond to the matter equation of state with no pressure, effective equation of state, and then we'll have radiation sooner or later. And how quickly, sooner or later, radiation occurs will affect the connection between the astronomical scales and number of refolding we are imprinting in the theory of inflation. And concrete formula is this one. If I take the horizon today, 10 to the 30 centimeters, 12,000 megaparsecs, the number of refolding. Remember, there was a connection between log k in number of refolding will be given by the formula, which involves a lot. It involves the energy scale of inflation. It involves the beginning of radiation. There are several terms that denote all together this as capital delta. And in different models of reheating, this difference may be as big as 14. And this is a big number. So 32 is the maximum we can have. And 14 is significantly lower. And in the era of precision cosmology, this is an important number. And this number comes from the theory of preheating. And of course, potential observables is the most interesting thing from preheating. So why the number of refolding is so important? Remember, I worked out how looks like a spectral index of fluctuations for the potential, and this spectral index of fluctuations for the potential involves this number n. The amplitude of gravity waves beside this index alpha of the potential itself has this 1 over n factor. It's a number of refolding. The number of refolding depends on preheating. And this is the data of the gravity waves versus spectral index, all WMAP data. And for m square, phi square, two different dots corresponding to the choice 50 or 60. For lambda phi to the 4, two different choices corresponding to 50 and 60. And if I take 62, my lambda phi to the 4 is not excluded at the 2 sigma level. But if I take a longer reheating, it will be over here, it will be excluded. So it's very important to rule out models. It's not just academic interest. It's, as I said, it's a precision cosmology request to have understanding of preheating. Now, I will talk about the model of the theory of how this transition happens in the model with M square phi square potential, with the model quantum field, the model of the potential, which is very simple. My Lagrangian will have my inflaton, temporal inflaton, and consider interaction of this condensate field with the field chi, and interaction with this probe field chi, which is probe field, which is not presented during inflation itself. It's a light field. Only fluctuations are relevant here. Will be very simple g square phi square chi square coupling. And this process is supposed to show us how fragmentation of the inflaton occurs. What we do quantum field theory of chi field in an expanding universe and interacting with the inflaton field, condensate phi. So it's a familiar equation after quantization for the mod. Remember this for the free field. For the free field, no coupling. Here I also include coupling to the inflaton. And I'm considering wavelengths which are corresponding to the wavelengths not very large, not those which were generated during inflation and sent outside. No, they are corresponding to the size of the horizon at the end of inflation, 1 millimeter in modern scales, 1 centimeter. And this is oscillating term. We know oscillation of the scalar field is here. We have to substitute in this equation and solve it and collect together a number of particles which we know how to calculate. And what we notice, first of all, that this equation has a brother, which is a Matthew equation. If we freeze out the expansion of the universe, and now we can do it, it's not a leading effect. The leading effect will be oscillation of the inflaton field. Harmonic oscillation of inflaton field bring us to the Matthew equation. And everyone knows what is the solution of the Matthew equation. They are parametric instability. But usually when we're dealing with the Matthew equation, this coefficient Q, which is a dimensional coefficient, I divided things by the mass, it's a, Q is a strength of interaction in units of the inflaton mass. Usually this parameter Q is very, very small, and therefore we're usually concerned about very narrow instability bounds of the Matthew equations. Here, this parameter is G square phi naught square over M square. My phi naught at the end of inflation, amplitude of the field condensate, is 10 to 18 GeV. This is 10 to 13 GeV, and pick up G square. But clearly, you cannot pick up, so clearly that this Q parameter easily can be very, very large. If I take G square is equal to 0.1, 0.01, this will be 10 to the 8, etc. It's a huge number. It means that here we're dealing with a very broad parametric resonance. And one can work out the theory of this broad parametric resonance. I'm skipping all of this. And the bottom line is, you can take it massless, or you can take it if it's heavier than inflaton, then it will be not produced. If it's lighter than inflaton, take it massless, it will be the same. The inflaton is 10 to 13 GeV. Inflaton is 10 to the 13 GeV. If I'm talking about fields TeV scale, they're massless here. Okay. The bottom line is the amplitude of those modes exponentially increasing. The fact that I have expansion of the universe change this simple static Matthew picture, and my number of particles for a given mode exponentially increasing, but sometimes can go decreasing. Statistically, it's always increasing, and it's a very interesting example of the stochastic dynamical system. Total number of particles exponentially quickly increasing with time. This is time in the units of inverse mass, and we see that within dozens of oscillations of inflaton field, amplitude of those particles exponentially increasing in such a way that back reaction of it will completely destroy the inflaton fragmentation. And moreover, we can see how inflatonic homogeneities are growing because the inflaton is attacked all the time by those exponentially increasing particles. They're also growing. And this point corresponds to complete decay of the inflaton, and here the turbulence begins. The turbulence was talking about, Jürgen was talking about in the context of Ricke and quantum field theory. This is how spectrum of particles look like. So resonance amplification goes like that, and this is the latest states when we have saturation towards the power law dependence. And this is pre-thermalization state. This is supposed to evolve further to the thermal state. And all of this was studied, and again, let me skip it. Instead of formulas, I show you the movie. I show you three-dimensional box which simulates a classical oscillating inflaton field, which is interacting with quantum fields, which are modeled by random Gaussian field. And because occupation number of this sky field very quickly became very large, I can treat it as a classical field. And this is what we'll do. I'll solve on the box the coupled system of equations. And here you will see slice, two-dimensional slice through the three-dimensional box, which is showing oscillations first and fragmentation next. And here you will see random Gaussian field with all increasing amplitude. And let's see the picture. So this guy's doing it. See, so it's initial state. This is time running in units of 10 to the minus 37 seconds. Oscillating a photon, you have back reactions a little bit. Look at those structures which are building up on the top of it. And this is already a nonlinear structure. Inflaton is fragmented, and the structures are getting finer and finer and finer. And we all thought it's now a turbulent stage, and I'll comment on, about it in a second.
There is no expansion of the universe.
There is expansion of the universe, yes, yes. It's as usually, in cosmology, we're always going to the comoving coordinates. So there is expansion of the universe, and it is important. Expansion of the universe is important. It makes parametric resonance broad.
But only if the homogeneous expansion.
It must be, because size of the horizon is 20 times bigger than this box. In other words, it's homogeneous, the horizon scale. This is more recent simulations, and I like them a lot, because with the high resolution they're showing, I was showing you what fields are doing here. Now we'll show you what energy density is doing, how energy density of inflaton is fragmenting, and this is fun. This is time running. This is two-dimensional slice. And energy density, this is fragmenting. Look at those standing waves, standing peaks. The density contrast, maximum 70. It's not homogeneous at all. And it's quite interesting thing. It's a random Gaussian field. But because my pairs are creating in a squeezed state, it means that particle and antiparticle will be with opposite momentum. It's a superposition of standing waves, and those peaks are non-linearly growing with time because it's non-linear interaction, but at this stage it doesn't look like very much as a turbulence of moving waves. Some people were asking if we have such a quick decay of the fragmentation of the inflaton. It's a very, very quick fragmentation of inflaton with very large growth of inhomogeneities. Maybe we can get a black hole out of this guy. Delta rho over rho is 70. And what will be gravitational response to those growing modes? And this will be now a picture of the gravitational potential as a gravitational response to these peaks growing with time. It's a negative potential, of course. Those are associated with the peaks, and the level is 10 to the minus 3, no black holes, unfortunately. But quite interesting. It's quite big potential. Now, all of this I was talking about parametric resonance in the large field models, with which evolving large value of the scalar field, which some people are not taking, many people. Would point that it's maybe a stretch. And another class of inflationary models, which are dealing with lower value of fields, much lower levels, no Planckian at all, is, as I said, hybrid inflationary models, prototype of that and string theory was pointing to. So in hybrid inflationary models, we have a direction, inflaton direction, and we have another direction, a bifurcation point in between them, and the dynamics towards reheating will be our system going through this bifurcation point, and something happens. And this is what happens in these simulations. My system is going over here, and you see how unusual is growth of inhomogeneities here. So what happens here, random Gaussian field of fluctuations here due to the nonlinearities evolve in the following way. High peaks of the random field goes very quickly. It feels this potential, and they're tachyonically amplified, while the regions with a lower value of the field in between are still staying at the top of the potential. And those patches which are rushing to the minimum, they will form this peak, and the field starts to oscillate around this peak and expand. And those expanding centers now will sending waves which are overlapping, and the turbulence will occur. And this happens all within one oscillation. It doesn't settle as a homogeneous oscillation in the minimum at all. The tachyonic preheating, how we called it, even more powerful than parametric resonance. Bottom line is, it does matter how we...
Why do you say it's unusual? Do you mean the current matrices of polynomials?
Well, but before we did this work, people always considered homogeneous trajectory to the minimum and oscillations around the minimum, and we're fishing for parametric resonance around the minimum. And when we realized it's not true, we were wondering how long it takes to fragment the inflaton, and it takes one oscillation to fragment the inflaton. And I should do the following. I did it before. Before showing the movie, I asked the audience how many oscillations it takes to fragment the inflaton. And that's right. But
it depends on coupling constant. If coupling constant is larger than one.
Steven Weinberg, for instance, says several. Anyway, this is what happens. This is initial Gaussian field. Those regions which are displaced because of their peaks going faster towards the minimum, and they are snapshots of what is going on. Very similar picture with the number density of particles. In other words, the end point is rather universal. We get particles out of equilibrium. We get dynamics towards thermalization. We're dealing with very high occupation numbers, and this is what is common between preheating and non-equilibrium phenomena in particle physics. This is all putting all together. This is very fast growth, either by one way or another, by parametric resonance or tachyonic preheating. There is a very interesting stage, which I call bubbly stage, which is local nonlinear stage, which settled initial conditions for subsequent evolution. This subsequent evolution, some called Kolmogorov turbulence. There are similarities with that, but I'm now taking it back, saying it's just a turbulence or something else, or fixing point process, and eventually we'll have thermalization. And I will touch only one subject, how this can be observed, this stage. What are potential observables from the stage of preheating? As we discussed, any light field will be experiencing generation of long wavelength fluctuation of it, as far as this field is light. And in string theory, the couplings are waves of fields, of moduli fields. And let us consider the following model. Suppose that inflaton field generates very, very small fluctuations. I settle the parameters for inflation such that inflaton fluctuations are very small. And yet, I can get fluctuations, but not from the inflaton field, from preheating. How? Consider G square phi square sigma square interaction. And as I said, this coupling G square suppose will be a function of some moduli field. And the moduli field, light during inflation, which is easy to do. Remember, we're dealing with the gut scale inflation. Even if we're dealing with the 100 GeV scale inflation, moduli field of the TeV scale are light fields. And as any light fields, those fields will be produced, and at the end of inflation, they look like a random Gaussian field. The moduli field are harmless. They never gravitationally dominate. They don't do anything gravitationally. The only thing they do, they modulate the value of coupling. It means that if I take different Hubble patches, my coupling will be slightly different in those Hubble patches. And as a result, the decay and thermalization will be slightly time-shifted in different Hubble patches. And technically, it will be imprinted again, finally, in the metric fluctuations. The whole metric fluctuations are generated from special variation of the coupling. And this is in other alternative mechanisms, in homogeneous preheating or modulated fluctuations, which has a spectral index differently depending on the parameters, also less than one. And it's fun to work with it, just to have interesting alternative. It at least helps, it adds to the model building, if you have extra model so what is important, that my variation is very small. To have a right amplitude, my variation should be very small. Coupling itself may be whatever you like, 0.2, 0.3, 0.5. The important thing is, 10 to the minus 1, 10 to the minus 2, minus 3. The important thing is the variation of coupling due to this field variation is small. And the field variation is typically 10 to the minus 7. This is easy to get. It is natural because the variation of the field is a Hubble divided by M Planck. Another and the last thing is another observable is generation of gravitational waves from inhomogeneous decay of the inflaton. During inflation, we consider it metric fluctuations, tensor metric fluctuations, gravitons, and we learn that they behave as a light scalar field, as I discussed before. They can be sent outside of the horizon and lead to the CMB polarization. And this will be contribution of modes well outside of the horizon. And if this inflation is driven by string theory, it will be a very, very small signal, and it's not good. We're not observing it. However, if inflaton is decaying widely, if it goes through fragmentation, as I was showing to you in simulations before, then we have very large density in homogeneities. Remember the plot with Dr. Rowe, order of 70. And those density in homogeneities will generate gravitational waves. And so this is because equation for gravitational waves is box H proportional to the TT part, traceless transversal part of the energy momentum tensor. And this TT part is non-zero. Moreover, it's nonlinear. It's very big. This is nonlinear, but because it's suppressed by the Planckian mass, this is still linear. And we have gravity waves generating from fragmenting inflaton. And there are several groups working on this and going through all of those things. Technically, what we did, you take those simulations I was showing about, you shoot the gravitational, you solve the equation box H is equal energy momentum tensor taking from this simulation. So we know the formalism and we can converge this to calculate the frequency and the amplitude, the energy density of background gravitational radiation coming from very, very, very early universe. And at this stage, it is technical problem. It's quite interesting. There are simplifications. What we found, for instance, that we don't need to take gravitational waves momenta in all directions. It's very isotropic. This is a signal. If I take different directions through the box, therefore several of them enough to get it. What I want to show. And at this stage, we're still struggling with technicalities because they're a new type of codes. And then just would like to flash for the same model, three different groups gives quite different answers. So this is a pioneer work by Sergey and Igor. It's not counted because it's pioneer work. It's greatly indicated there is a signal. But other groups, for instance, predicting the amplitude of gravity waves and frequencies given by that. So another group given by that. And it's different by order of magnitude, this answer. And the question is, who is right? And fortunately, because we understand the physics of preheating analytically, we can work it out, and numerical codes giving us answer, which is in agreement with analytical calculations. So this is just to stress we are on the technical stage of this project. Altogether, we have to look at the combined plot of gravitational waves coming from different sources and different frequencies. This is very high frequency of CMB photons, 10 to 10 GeV. This is the frequency of LIGO. This is the frequency of LISA. And there are two experiments dealing with interesting frequencies which are outside of the white dwarf background. There is a window which can observe very low cosmological signal. It's a Big Bang Observatory and De Sigo experiments. And I hope we'll have a nice talk by Stern Finney about gravity wave experiment at the conference. The bottom line is what inflationary models predict after inflation. This is the signal of gravity waves after inflation of the chaotic type. The chaotic inflationary models predicting quite strong value of omega, but very high frequencies. And hybrid inflationary models, there is much more freedom in parameters, can be shifted towards good frequencies and different people giving different answers. I think this is too optimistic answer, and we rather expect something within this interval. The bottom line is that the story of the stochastic gravitational waves from different sources is similar to the story of CMB anisotropy, but only in this century. And we either, if we're dealing with the high energy inflation, chaotic type inflation, large value of phi inflation, Planckian scale, we will observe CMB polarization through we will observe CMB polarization generated by these gravity waves sent from inflation. And if we're unlucky, cannot observe it because energy scale is lower, there is a window, and this window will be targeted by gravitational wave astronomy. And let me finish with this.
What about the thermalization itself? You haven't addressed the later stages. Are there any constraints on this whole picture coming from the amount of, brick is a big issue, how long it takes to thermalize?
In cosmology, we, as I said, the thermal equilibrium erases all the details sooner or later. But the only thing which does not erase is the context. If the temperature was high enough, there will be dangerous cosmological relics. And to put this, and actually,
the temperature is low enough, it won't produce something.
That's right. But it happens that to this story, we don't need to know temperature per se. We don't need ultimate temperature. The because it doesn't matter how gravitinos will be produced, for thermalized particles or not yet thermalized particles. As far as those non-thermalized particles are highly energetic particles, they will be produced. And therefore, what is important, what will be the typical energies of those particles? For cosmology, it is less, it's more academic question for thermalization temperature alone. It's interesting what are the typical energies and towards thermalization.
But there is an end to it. We want to have nuclear synthesis far from equilibrium.
Oh, no. But remember, we're talking about energies, not in MEV. We're talking about energies of 10 to 7 GeV.
So
they
expect that
before nuclear synthesis.
So if you make an estimate based on that picture of starting with this turbine or whatever, and estimate or guesstimate where what energy thermalization occurs, what do you get?
Much higher than the nuclear synthesis. Much higher than it will be. It's a question of estimation of the timing. It depends on the coupling. I would say, in the picture I was showing, if I go beyond the lambda phi for the fourth series when lambda is 10 to the minus 13. Then it will be, I don't know, thousands of those times or tens of five of those times. Time I was showing. Maybe tens of 10 GeV.
I thought you said 10 to 10.
No. The energy scale after energy scale is defined by. My model. If I'm dealing with chaotic inflation, energy scale is 10 to 13 GeV. It's a very high energy scale. And if my thermalization goes through preheating, I excite everything quickly and let them interact. 10 to 10 is what I would guess is the liquid temperature. If I deal with the hybrid inflation, when energy scale is much lower from the beginning, say, I don't know, 10 to the 10 GeV or 10 to the 7 GeV, well, I would say 10 to the 4 GeV.
Is it fair to say that there is no reliable estimate of this temperature? That is,
yeah, it's fair to say. It's fair to say.
Even for this power, the coupling there.
Yeah, it is fair to say. I'm very much interested in the details, how it occurs. As you saw, this story ends by the turbulent stage. And we already learned that in chaotic inflation, if I buy this picture, I will overproduce gravitino. I have to do something with the gravitino.
So you said the gravitino problem is now solved by looking at this preheating process rather than temperature, right?
Not at all. I'm saying that gravitino problem, it doesn't care you're dealing with thermalized plasma or non-thermalized plasma.
Okay, so now to have that problem, what should I do then? What should you do?
I will take massive gravitino. I will take massive gravitino.
No, for a fixed mass of the gravitino.
Yeah, but it's very important to know the number. If I take 100 GeV, then most of the models are in bad shape.
And why do you say you take a much more massive?
Because the abundance of gravitino sensitive to the mass as a power of the mass. The calculations which were made, the temperature and mass of the gravitino having this character. So for the 100 GeV mass, my temperature should be 10 to the 7.
So what temperature? Is that after thermal radiation or what?
The region.
Of course, it's thermal radiation, thermal mass.
This is the Rigi temperature.
The beginning, the highest temperature of the thermal mass. Right. So, and this goes as a, if I remember correctly, as a cubic of mass and some power of the mass. I can significantly relax this.
Okay.